Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast. This week I'm joined by Lizzie Ammon, cricket reporter for The Times and Wisden Cricket Monthly contributor. Hello, Lizzie.
Hello.
And Taha Hashim, Wisden staff writer. Taha, what's your moment of the week?
Hi, Ben. My moment of the week would have to be Don Best getting his fifer. I've been quite sort of enamoured by the whole Best story, really, when he came in for that for the second test. Not even in the original squad. I think, you know, he exceeded everyone's expectations, just tying up an end, especially on the day that he, the day he first bowled, he sort of applied so much pressure. And by the end of the day, when the seamers came back in, that's when England sort of reaped the rewards. But then heading into that third test, this time he had to play a different role, because we saw the turn that Keshav Maharaj got on day one, which was sort of unprecedented in South Africa. And so you knew that Best had to play his role. And to be honest, I didn't really think he had it in him, but, you know, he seems to be a guy who kind of, he's up for it. The way he was bowling, you know, he'd do his little change-ups with the round arm stuff, but also, you know, just when Faf du Plessis just blocks one back to him, he's kind of smiling because he's just sort of enjoying the moment. And the way he bowled was, you know, he was helped by some poor, you know, batting from the South Africans. But to take a fifer, 22 years of age, you know, not even being in the original squad, you know, you got to respect that.
Lizzie, I think, did you see his first class debut or his first fifer?
I saw both. Yeah. Both his first class and his championship debut, yes.
Was there excitement around him then?
Well, not in his first class debut. It was against Pakistan and he went wicketless and looked pretty ineffective against a pretty high quality Pakistan side, it has to be said. Later on in the season, I think it was September later that year, he took six in his first innings in Championship against Warwickshire, you know, getting Bell and Trott and Ambrose and, you know, decent players. I think that the sort of feeling at the time was he just needed a lot of overs. You know, he was young, needed to bowl a lot. And the trouble was he then didn't and hasn't because of circumstances and because it's almost impossible to be a spinner in English county cricket. So he just hasn't got overs under his belt. So by the time he was picked originally in that series against Pakistan, here, he'd only ever bowled twice away from Taunton, and they were both in the West Indies. Yeah. I mean, it's a bonkers situation, isn't it? But fair play to the lad. I mean, he's an infectious character. And one of the things I remember from his championship debut was that I've never really seen anyone quite so excited to make their first team debut. I mean, he was just, his eyes were popping out of his head. He looked just so thrilled to be there, and I think that can take you a long way.
Yeah, and it is encouraging how much, I mean, he seems to have a lot of self-belief and also seems to be just improving so much as he gets a chance at the top level. Like, I think even though he didn't look overly threatening against Pakistan, people thought he didn't look overawed to be there, and now he is, as you say, there was a lot of expectation on him, really. I think people, we were talking in the office about, we sort of expected Joe Root to kind of out bowl him and maybe look a bit more threatening. It could be one of those kind of scenarios. And actually, he did just look like a proper test match bowler. But as you said, it's a strange situation at Somerset where two of England's best spinners are at the same county. And it gets a bit stranger.
I mean, hence why he had to go out on loan to Yorkshire, although I don't know that you'd want to be a spinner going out on loan to Headingley, would you?
Well, this season as well, they've got Maharaj and Ashwin, don't they?
Yeah, so he is going to have to look fairly carefully at how much cricket he's going to get and make some sensible decisions about whether he needs to go somewhere else, because he's got to get over it under his belt.
I think Joe Root said that just a couple of days ago as well, that, you know, he just needs to keep bowling, and that's the main problem spinners in county cricket, especially English ones, who are just trying to make their way through.
Exactly. It's really difficult. It's a really difficult situation because he's a South West boy. He doesn't, you know, he won't want to leave his home county. He's Somerset through and through. I mean, Devon, but, you know, South West. Yeah. But, it's a really tricky one. But I was really impressed by how he did that job that England have really been crying out for, the containing job. You know, without a containing spinner, England are real trouble, aren't they? Mm. But that gives you so much more, many more options as a captain. If you've got one end tied up, you can use your seamers in such a much more effective way.
Yeah, and looking quite far ahead, I think that's what England are going to want in Australia, isn't it? I mean, Moeen Ali sort of did his best to be a containing spinner down there last time, but that's not his role, and you don't get the kind of rewards being an attacking off spinner that you do in other parts of the world, England even. So that is quite encouraging.
So he's changed his technique a little bit. He's worked really hard. He's kind of got a bit more overspin. And you can see it's gripping. The seam position seems to be a little bit different. and he's gripping a little bit more. But he's accurate, isn't he? He's not wayward, which you get from young spinners often.
Yeah, and he was talking about how he spoke to Ranganath Harath about lowering his arm and like just changing just little variations like that. He always doesn't have like a doos or anything, but it's about the subtle stuff as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not been anything like drastic. He's not suddenly got some magic ball. Talking to Richard Dawson, who was out there at the spin camp where Harath was working with Bess, it was just, you know, it sounds boring, but it was a really simple thing, him just focusing on bowling his best ball.
Yeah. So apart from the overall development that England might not be awful at Test cricket, the big news from the Port Elizabeth Test was that Gagisa Abad will miss the final game series after picking up a fourth demerit point for his celebration upon the dismissal of Joe Root. For those of you who didn't see the moment in question, first of all, where have you been? But second of all, you got quite close to Joe Root and shouted quite loudly and for quite a long time.
Talk about his kneecaps, though, rather than his face.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't directed at Root and he wasn't swearing, but he did get closer than maybe he needed to. Lizzie, how did you view that one?
Well, I mean, I don't think it was awful. As you say, it wasn't at his face. It was sort of more at his feet, wasn't it? And it was just, you could tell it was just a moment, a kind of swept up in the moment. It was hot and it had been hard work. And, you know, Joe Root's a big wicket. He's a div, basically, isn't he? Because he was already in trouble. He'd already been warned about this sort of thing. If he'd have taken two steps to the left or two steps to the right and still done the same celebration, he wouldn't have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it would have been at grass rather than at Joe Root. But he's an idiot. It's a real shame. But you cannot base punishments based on whether people are going to miss out seeing their players. Otherwise, you just wouldn't do it, would you? But he's an idiot, and it's a shame. And it's South Africa are up against it now.
Yeah, is that you at all?
I mean, the problem for me lies with the ICC regulations. I mean, I think we all saw the line where it's almost dependent on you provoking reaction from the batsman.
Oh yeah, how the batsman could have reacted.
How the batsman could have reacted, exactly. And that's why he's in trouble. Of course, there's no physical contact. There's no swearing. To me, it feels, you could say it's not harsh because, you know, as per the regulations, he deserves a demerit point. But I just think those regulations need to be looked at because you're ignoring the emotions of Test cricket and you know, South Africa's best fast bowler getting through England's best batsman. For that to be then tarnished by this is just a bit annoying, really.
Yeah, for me, because that was the moment of quite a slow day one when England made just over 200 and lost four wickets. But for Rabada to knock over the Indian captain with a brilliant ball and to just let go like that, it was a brilliant moment to watch. But I think basically it is just a borderline case and people will feel quite strongly about what is actually quite a narrow decision, basically. I mean, I can see why people are saying he hasn't directed anything at Joe Root. That's the thing. And I also see people saying he's in his personal space or he's close, he needs to be. It is just a borderline case. And he shouldn't be anywhere close to the borderline since he's so close to a ban, I guess. But the best thing was, did you see Nasser Hussain and Michael Holding's discussion of it?
Yeah, yeah.
On lunch?
They had an absolute ding-dong, didn't they?
It was great, yeah. Well, one thing I liked was the sort of traffic violation analogy that kind of took hold sort of throughout the day. So they talked about points on a driving license and that he'd now got his last 2 points and you don't get a ban for the last 2 points you've got. It's for the accumulation. But then you had Nasser saying, like, he's just on 29 and a 30 zone. He's just on 29 and a 30. But, yeah, it just ended with Holding right in Nasser's face saying, you want me to invade your space like that? It was one of the great moments of TV. So on England, from that test, we should be wary of getting carried away, but it really was quite encouraging, right? I mean, first away innings win since the 10-11 Ashes, and it was the young players doing it. I mean, we talked about Bess, but Pope just obviously looks like such a class player. Even Crawley looks like he does have something about him. Obviously, it was a bit of an odd selection that he didn't have that weight of runs behind it, but the way he's sort of face down and not seem scared by the quicker bowlers makes it seem like he's sort of possibly got a future at this level, would you say?
Yeah, I think he's definitely got the head. I mean, Rob Key doesn't big up players for no reason. That's not what he's like, really, Rob Key, is he? But he has been talking about Zach Crawley for quite a while, saying there is something there, there's something special there. And you're right, he hasn't got the way to runs, but it's, you know, neither did Struscothic or Vaughan when they were picked, did they? So, yes, I think the thing that is really pleasing is that there's been a lot gone wrong on this tour. You know, losing Rory, losing Jimmy, illness, Jack Leach being properly ill with, you know, sepsis, all sorts of things, poor bloke. And it could have really you know, ended the tour. People's heads could have gone down. But I think with young players, what you get is, you know, they're not kind of ground down by previous problems, are they? And they're just sort of enthusiastic and really up for it and really want to kind of prove themselves when they get an opportunity. And I think we saw that with Pope and Bess, and we've seen it with Sibley, and we've seen it with Crawley to an extent. And I think that's really encouraging. Now, you're right, we shouldn't run before we could walk, because it could all go horribly wrong. I mean, it could all go horribly wrong in Sri Lanka, couldn't it? Because England and spin and Sri Lanka and, you know, we've been here before, haven't we? So we shouldn't, you know, get too excited. But I think the signs are there. I think the other thing that I found really pleasing is that it feels like Root is coming into his own finally as a captain. And I wonder if that is because he's got young players who look up to Joe Root and who have see Joe Root as, you know, they're kind of one of their idols, really. And he can stamp his mark on a young team, whereas if you're surrounded by old heads, you know, they're a bit set in their ways, aren't they? But he did some good things, Root, tactically, I think. And his tactics have always been under question. And you know, Alistair Cook wasn't a tremendous tactician on the field, was he? But I think, you know, putting in a leg slip and, you know, having men round the back when he needs to have, using his, apart from on the day when he over bowled himself, you can see why that happened. But I think he's used his resources pretty well and put his fielders in the right places. So, yeah, that was really pleasing, actually.
Yeah, and the point about the senior players is an interesting one, because England haven't had Broad and Jimmy playing, or Jimmy didn't play after the first test, so those two haven't played together in the two tests that England have won. Do you see that as helping Root stamp his authority, do you think?
Possibly, but I don't...
You think you're reading too much into it?
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think you're reading too much into that when you this whole Broad and Anderson shouldn't play together debate as well, that kind of enters that. I think the fact of the matter is on those two, it's hard to kind of see them playing together just because Anderson's injury troubles, but also, I mean, we're going to talk about this going forward, but you look at the way Mark Wood bowled there as well in that third test, and then with Jofra looking sharp as well, it is just, for me, it's becoming too appetizing to not think of having both of them in one pace attack, as risky as it is.
Yeah, what would you do for the next test? With it looks like Jofra Archer probably fit and back to his best. Mark Wood seems to have come through that test okay. Would you play all the quicks? Would you leave out Bess? Which one of them would you pick if you'd stay with Bess? What would you do?
I would go for it's harsh on Sam Curran, but I would go for Broad, Archer and Wood.
I'm with you. And it's really harsh on Sam Curran.
Really harsh.
Really, really harsh, because, you know, he has done absolutely nothing wrong, really, has he? But I'm not a fan of playing five seamers at all, because I think you end up underusing one. And it sort of messes with the balance. And also, we know that Don Best can bat. He just hasn't really shown it very much.
And he can bowl too.
And him, yeah. But I mean, in terms of not having a great big long tail.
Yeah. And Mark Wood can bat as well, actually.
Yeah, well, it turns out. Yeah. It turns out the De Villiers of Durham. I always think, unless it's really, really, really green, the conditions dictate it, I just don't think it's a good idea not to have a spinner, although having said that, you have got Joe Root and you have got Joe Denley. So they will have to have a good look and a good think about that. But it's too tempting not to have two very quick bowlers against a very fragile South African batting lineup. I think you could rattle through them pretty easily.
Yeah, I see that logic for me. And I think England will be quite tempted by leaving out Don Best, especially because of how Joe Root bowled in that second innings. But I think they should keep him around. And I think it just would be just risking too much to play Mark Wood two tests in a row, no matter how fit he says he is and no matter how many tests he passed. A man with that injury history, you do just have to, like, just, I think, look at the bigger picture, as Nath said on commentary about Joe Root and his handling of Wood.
Yeah, that is a real risk, because you do want him fit for Sri Lanka, because he'll be a real asset in Sri Lanka. I mean, luckily after Sri Lanka, he can have quite a substantial break, actually, if he doesn't play very much county or any county cricket. I mean, he may play a couple, but he's not doing IPL, is he? And there's a nice little 2 month gap or 7 week gap. It's just a case of whether you think he can. They want to win the series, don't they? And they want to win it convincingly. And if you've got your assets, your best assets. The other thing that you've got to slightly keep in mind, and this is really dull, is World Test Championship points. Mm. Because, you know, there are points up for grabs. It's 30 points up for grabs for each win in this series, something like that's 30, right, yeah. 60, 90, 120. Yeah. It's a ridiculous system to work out, isn't it? But they are trying to keep themselves in the hunt. I mean, I know that Australia and India have really pulled away, but England are quite clear they do want to be in that final.
Yeah, and actually, looking at how the table is could shape up, England aren't out of contention by any means. I mean, if you look at what Australia have got left to play, they go to Bangladesh where they drew last time. It's easy to see with their struggles against Spain that could happen again. They travelled to South Africa in a year, and those have always historically been quite close series. Who knows what state South Africa will be in by that point, but it's not out of the question that could happen. And India travelled to Australia when India won their last time, and that'll be a really good series. It's possible that Australia could even win none of those series, and then England have a real shout with, okay, they'll get pace in India, but they've got three winnable series before that. So actually, it's more open than it looks at the moment, I think, that World Championship table.
A bit stacked against England, though, with the number of longer series they have than... I mean, India have played quite a lot of two and three test series, haven't they?
I mean, it's worth noting that we're having this discussion in that it is becoming something that really matters, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a sense, the reason I bring it up is because England bring it up a lot. Ashley Darce brings it up a lot, quite a lot. That they do see that's quite important, yeah, being in that final. It would be a bit weird to have a final up at Lord's Hall, England, exactly. England not in it. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's not the be all and end all, is it? That's not really, you know, it's not the most important thing in there. The Ashes is clearly the thing that they're most bothered about, but it's a factor.
Yeah, and I think for Joe Root's captaincy as well, it'd be a really valuable thing to have, like a feather in his cap, to have that he's won the World Test Championship. Would be a huge thing really for him to say when, like, sort of against all odds at this point, at least, or a couple of weeks ago.
So what I'm saying is that winning tests,
yes,
and yeah, winning and not necessarily thinking too far ahead is quite important, mm-hmm, because they need the points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the makeup of that Sri Lanka attack in a little bit more detail. So Moeen Ali made some interesting comments this week in an interview with the BBC Asian Network about him feeling like something of a scapegoat for England's test team's failings, and that was why he took a break. And maybe in light of that, it's optimistic to expect him to return for that tour. So what is England's first choice attack for that, for the first test? Is it Bess Leach and another spinner? Do they go two seamers and Stokes and those two spinners? What do you think?
Well, last time, three spinners worked a treat, didn't it?
But those were three. Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid were the best one in the world, are better than Don Bess and Matt Parkinson, yeah, whoever the best spinner is.
I think England have to hope that Moeen Ali makes himself available. You know, as well as Don Bess has gone. I still can't. I don't think you can get away from the fact that Moeen Ali is still the best test spinner in England.
Oh, it's so tricky, isn't it? And this is where it really highlights England's spin problems. Is when you're trying to find three. You know, you're right finding one, but yeah, when you're trying to find three, it's a problem. Moeen might be persuaded, not least because it's a short tour, mm, and not too intense. I mean, they're back-to-back test matches, but it's quite short if you include the warm-up. It's 3 weeks or 3.5 weeks or something, all told. And it wouldn't interrupt his any other commitments he has, I don't think. But he clearly is in a weird space, isn't he, in terms of what he wants and doing a bit of soul searching and what's going to make him happy and what he's enjoying and what's he going to get pleasure out of. And if he doesn't get pleasure out of test cricket, then there really is no point, is there? Yeah. There's no point doing it if you're not enjoying it. So, yeah, that leaves England in a real dilemma, because if they do take Matt Parkinson, I mean, they clearly don't trust him enough to play him on this tour, do they? I do think you could do with a leg spinner in Sri Lanka, don't you?
Yeah, and more than just Joe Denley, I suppose.
Yeah, bless him.
Yeah, and we'll come on to it later, but there is probably a gap open for like one of the lower lights. He's on that Lions tour, like an Amar Verdi or a Mohsin Crane.
Yeah, I think Verdi is the only specialist spinner on the...
In the Red Bull squad,
In the Red Bull squad.
So, I mean, and we've seen with Bess, like, if he bowls well there, they could easily be tempted to sort of give him a go, at least around the squad. I don't think that's out of the question. But I think you touched on the Mark Wood point, which I think is a really interesting one in Sri Lanka, because I think that's almost one of the places most in the world where you really value the pure pace, especially because the ball can get roughed up and reverse swing a bit.
Yeah, and also because of his... he's a bit skiddier, isn't he? And that's quite helpful in Sri Lanka. He's been effective there, hasn't he? In the past, has he played a Lions there? I seem to remember. But he's the pace, absolutely, because it just gives you the variation if you've got the three spinners rotating, and then you can blast with some pace. Yeah.
And especially last time they went to Sri Lanka, I think they would have had Anderson, Broad, Curran. They didn't have Archer was not in,
no,
in the
no,
frame.
They didn't
at
have out and out
Wood
pace,
wasn't there,
yeah.
So they didn't. But the spinners did the job. But this time, if we're talking about the spin attack, it's going to be a step down. Of course, when you look at Leach, Rashid obviously bowled quite well there, and Moeen Ali, it will be a step down this time. So you really need the two seamers that will play, you know, two or three seamers that will play, to be, you know, high quality and effective for those conditions. Anderson wasn't really. I don't think he played the third test either. No, wasn't really.
He said he felt like a spare part, didn't he?
Not,
exactly.
It's not his manner, is it?
And Broad was dropped, I think, for the first
yeah,
two tests.
Play, yeah.
So yeah, Archer and Wood, for in terms of the seam perspective, those are the two seamers you really want to be, you know, fit. And I guess that brings us back to the point of the next.
Do
test.
You, does he? Do you does do? He? Does he? Do you give Mark Wood a? I mean, back to back tests is hard. Yeah. Although we have to remember that they didn't. He didn't bowl loads and loads of overs, did he, in this third test because of the nature of the way the match went?
Yeah, true. Although with them following on, he did bowl a lot in a row, in like sort of without a break. Obviously,
yeah. Although Joe used him quite effectively because he used him in short bursts and didn't bowl him into the ground.
Yeah, the one time he came close to was on that the fourth evening. He bowled him six overs in a row, I think, because he wanted one more wicket
too
to
many.
Get into the third. It's
got to be four overs, hasn't it? Really, he's got to be four over bursts.
Okay, and we will get onto some other cricket at some point. But the two other players, it feels like a big test for, are Joe Denley and Joss Butler, with Keaton Jennings and Ben Folkes possibly set for recalls in Sri Lanka. Those two could struggle to retain their places. Let's start with Denley. So we mentioned Crawley earlier. How do you see the Denley, Crawley, Jennings, I guess, battle for spots two and three shaping up, assuming that Dom Sibley is sort of set in stone there for the moment?
Well, I would stick with Denley for the moment. Mm-hmm. A, because I think he can play spin better than Crawley at the moment. That's not to say that, it's just that being a county cricketer, you don't get exposed to loads of it, do you? And Denley's had a bit more experience of it. And also, I think there's a lot to be said for having a couple of quite experienced guys in the side. If you are going to pack it with youngsters, there's a lot to be said for. And he's a very calm bloke, Joe Denley. I think a really good guy to have around. Plus, you know, Zach Crawley knows him. You know, I think it's good to have him around. But the Keaton Jennings thing is fascinating, isn't it? Because this is if he comes in, I can't see him doing more than two tests and then going back out. Can you? I just can't. I don't think he's in England's top order for the long term. I mean, he would just be a horses for courses pick, and then he goes back to Old Trafford.
But as you say, with the World Test Championship being like they do value those points so much, that's fine, right? They'd be fine with those.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a weird situation for Keaton, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I think there is something to be said about Test cricket becoming a more squad orientated game. Mm-hmm. And you have to think, you can't just always be thinking about your 11 for to be, you know, the same for 2 years. You know, that there have got to be changes. You look at how Virat Kohli's used his India side for the last few years. You know, he chops and changes a lot, but, you know, it does the trick when he looks at the conditions. So I can totally understand the Jennings argument. In terms of the number three spots, I don't think there's really any debate. I think Joe Denley's is doing his job for the side. I don't think he's a terrible player at spin. He was on the tour of Sri Lanka last time around, so must have learnt something through that as well. And his part-time leg spin is very handy and should be, you know, acknowledged that it could be really important in Sri Lanka, even if it's for just a couple key wickets. Yeah.
Do you not, there's a thing though, like Denley has done a really good job, I agree, but his job has been blunting the new ball and laying a platform. And you don't really, you're not bothered about blunting the new ball in Sri Lanka. You want to, really want to score runs against the new ball. I think I agree that I was picking. I also think that Denley might have struggled a bit to rotate the strike in his career so far, but he's also shown that he can improve and kind of solve problems and stuff. And he could easily do that in Sri Lanka. He could get out there and find a couple of sort of release shots or a way to just turn it around the corner and get to the other end. And that's kind of all he'll need to be a pretty good player of spin, I think.
Yeah, I think he might find it easier in Sri Lanka than he has in South Africa, actually, because he's had a slightly difficult job, hasn't he, in South Africa, because of these clear instructions to soak up the, you know, to just bat time and be there. That means that he probably has got a bit stuck. Because of that, you know, that's been foremost in his mind, is I've got to stay here. It doesn't matter how many runs I get, I've just got to stay here. And I don't know that there'll be quite such clear-cut instructions in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm. And similarly with Butler, I mean, the drop has been remarkable. He averaged 41 until the start of the Ashes and 22 since then. Is time running out for him?
Oh, it's so upsetting, isn't it? Because he's just such a talented lad.
Yeah.
But there's only so long you can keep being picked on potential, isn't there? And that's kind of, that's what he was picked on. He was picked on natural talent and potential based on white ball performances, and it's not really delivered. And yeah, it's really upsetting, but I don't know how much longer he's got.
I mean, I look at your reaction there when Ben brings up Jos Buttler, and that's the reaction everyone has, because Jos Buttler is that cricketer that you really
want. He's
supposed
to be really good.
You want him to nail down Test cricket because he's so much fun to watch. We've had glimpses of that when, you know, unfortunately, sometimes all he's doing is, you know, he's stuck with the tail and he starts hitting out, and it's you know, it's the most enthralling passage of play that day. That last Test was such a big opportunity because the platform had been set, and this was Buttler now in the position that he'd been brought in for. And then just the dismissal was so sort of,
you know, one of 14, wasn't it? Chipping it back to the bowler.
Yeah, it was really, you know, soft, it was quite tame.
That century
really.
At Trent Bridge feels a long time ago, doesn't it? Because there, I thought, oh, he's worked this out. He's worked out what to do here, because he played a sort of proper Test match innings there, didn't he? But isn't that was a bit of a flash in the pan, really?
But then people were saying similar things after the fourth Ashes Test, were they? And then he came out and sort of smashed a 70 at the Oval and batted how he'd been picked to bat, with that sort of that mix of like counter-attacking but also shepherding the tail and picking his moment and that sort of thing. So it's not out of the question that he goes out there.
No,
and
I'm just sure that one in six or seven is enough, is it? Yeah.
So you think even if he struggles at the, even if he gets runs in the next Test, it could still be Folks rather than Buttler for Sri Lanka?
Well, let's look at, I mean, Folks did particularly well in Sri Lanka, didn't he, last time?
I think that's an understatement.
Yeah. So, and if they are picking horses for courses, then you've got to go, yeah, look how this lad did last time we were here. Let's get him back in again, which might mean curtains for Jos, but also equally it might mean curtains for Johnny, mightn't it? Because, I mean, he's just floating around doing naff all at the moment.
I feel for him, because I think, you know, the instruction was before New Zealand that, you know, he's got to go and work on his game, and yet he's been, you know, just shepherding drinks around.
I mean, it's a really odd thing, is it? Go and work on your game, but there isn't any cricket for you to go and work on your game on. Yeah. So, yeah, like, I honestly think they probably should have just said to him, we're going to leave you out all winter.
Exactly, yeah.
We're going to leave you out all winter. You go and find some cricket to play, you know, even if it's grade cricket or whatever. Go and find some cricket to play. And then we'll reevaluate at the beginning of the season, because otherwise it's just really, you missed those two Tests in New Zealand. How much can you do in indoor nets? Not lots. And then there he is, you know, with a high-vis vest on. Yeah. It's just weird. It's just really weird, isn't it?
And then both Buttler and Bester will go to the IPL, which looks like having the longest IPL in history, apparently, so that they can get rid of double headers. And so they might be available for like possibly just two championship games before the first Test of the summer. So there's not really a lot of time for them if they do get left out.
No, I mean, at least the thing with being at the IPL is they're actually playing cricket,
yeah,
rather than being in a net. So, you know, I mean, I mind less that he's going to be at the IPL and missing county cricket, as long as he's playing some cricket. But it's just weird. I don't quite know. He's at a real crossroads, isn't he, in his Test career, Johnny Bairstow? Because, you know, Folks might come in for Sri Lanka and then nail down his place. And then what do you do for the first Test of the summer? Be really harsh to drop him, wouldn't it?
And I've done it before, but yeah.
Yeah, I know they've done it before, but you know, it's one that, you know, I think we're some way off solving this one, aren't we?
Yeah, right. That's quite enough England for the time being. From a South African point of view, much of the discussion has been about Faf du Plessis's captaincy, which we went into reasonable amount in last week's pod. But Quinton de Kock will take over as ODI captain. It's been announced, and Faf said that the Wanderers Test will most probably be his last in South Africa. It's kind of just a bit sad how it's all unravelled, not just this series, but in the last kind of year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, so much of it is circumstances beyond his control, isn't it? And that's a real shame, because he's clearly a very good captain. He has been a very good captain. We saw in the first Test that I thought he was excellent in the first Test, and really used his play as well and G'd them up. They were obviously buoyed by that kind of, you know, new leadership team bump that football teams get when they get a new manager. And it's, yeah, I mean, it must be really draining being captain of South Africa because of everything that goes alongside that, and all of the politics and all of the recent politics. And it sort of amazes me, actually, that they managed to still produce performances despite all the carnage forever going on in and around their cricket board. So, yeah, it's a real shame. But, yeah, I suspect we'll see him in county cricket, won't we?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. the new manager bump is interesting because Mark Boucher was basically described in a piece that Dan Gallagher wrote for us as almost like Big Dunk, Duncan Ferguson, Everton, like the exact same personality.
It's
like
not massively flattering, is it?
Well, and it does seem like there's been a little lack of attention to detail. Like Rabada and the team management didn't know that he was on 3 demerit points, which you'd think you would know, and you would tell a player just to rein it in.
Yeah, chilly boots, yeah.
And it's so that's it'd be interesting to see how long his sort of honeymoon period lasts anyway. Other cricket and some county news. Ryan Tendulkar has stepped down as Essex captain. Tom Wesley will replace him. Lizzie, where does he rank among the great county skippers?
Oh gosh, well that's a question. He's been a very, very good captain for Essex. He's got them, up promoted champions twice in two years. And clearly commands a lot of respect amongst that team and the fans. I don't think it's any great surprise that he stood down. It was sort of indicated, really, wasn't it, at the back end of last season, some weird comments that Simon Harmer made at finals day, where he said, I want to be captain, but not till Ryan steps down, which rather indicated that Ryan was about to step down. Yeah. And as it happens, Simon hasn't been made captain.
No.
Tom Wesley has been, although I suspect Harm will probably be blast captain.
Okay. He still is. Yeah.
And then of course is he in the 100, Harmer? It's good. This tells you all you need to know about the 100, is that no one knows who's playing. knows who plays for who.
I recall him being picked up.
Yeah, they'd be daft enough. That means he wouldn't be one day captain, would he? But it's interesting. Essex have got an incredible amount of leadership potential in quite a few players. Nick Brown, Todd Wesley, Dan Lawrence, there's
Alistair Cook.
there's a lot of really good guys there. But I think Tom Wesley's probably a very good pick because he's fallen quite off the England radar now, hasn't he? Mm.
Does this give other teams a sniff, do you think? I mean, if, say, Wesley does take a bit of time to bed in and Somerset's obviously have the points deduction, do you think it could be quite an open championship season?
Who knows? Yeah. I get it wrong every single year.
To win it last year, didn't you?
Every single year I get it wrong. I think that's one of the glorious things about the championship is that we all go in with our predictions and none of them ever come true. Surrey will be strong because they've got, you look at their squad. Although I said that last year, we say it every year, don't we? But I think Essex are still looking a very balanced side. And I don't think they're losing many to the IPL, are they? That I can think of.
No. And
that, you played 7 rounds before the end of May or whatever it is. So, that's good for them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. England announced their Women's T20 World Cup squad, which is roughly as expected. The one change they made from the tour of Malaysia to play Pakistan was Kirsty Gordon being left out in favour of Georgia Elwis, which I guess just speaks to the conditions in Australia, which won't spin as much and you might want that batting depth and stuff. But it's a remarkable rise for Sarah Glenn and Maddie Villiers in particular. Sarah Glenn, leg spinner who made her debut in Malaysia and the first leg spinner England have had for absolutely ages. Charlotte Edwards bowled a bit of part-time stuff and before that took back to 2003 to find the last one. And Mandy Villiers is quite exciting, obviously starred in that win that England had over Australia in the Ashes. So I think, yeah, maybe a couple of sort of, as you say, with the test team, the players who aren't sort of weighed down by past failures, maybe there could be a little bit of a bounce with that, but I think probably Australia to win that quite confidently.
It's clearly favourites, aren't they, on home turf, and the fact that they're the strongest, they're just the strongest team.
Yeah, it's funny that Australia had the sort of the wild card picks, really, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got James Sutherland's daughter in there, haven't they?
Yeah.
Which was a real left field, apparently made him cry. I wonder if it made him cry as much as sandpaper.
Oh yeah, and because his son played for Australia under-19s, I think, at the last World Cup, and I don't think he cried then. In other women's World Cup squad news, Sanam Mir, captain of Wisden's women's team of the decade, and by a distance, I'd say Pakistan's best ever player, was left out. She posted a good cryptic tweet. Did you see that one?
I did.
Yeah. Don't blame a clown for acting like a clown. Ask yourself why you keep going to the circus. If it is to be her last game in a Pakistan shirt, she's got a job as a Wisden columnist, I think.
Yeah. Very odd. Very odd.
Yeah, it was an odd one.
I think it's Wisden finishes people off, you know.
yeah, Ryan Dunnesgaard's a captain of a
championship team in a decade.
So that's Virat Kohli, captain of the
decade. Yeah, you've had it. Sorry, Virat.
So England Lions have departed for Australia. Two of the more interesting stories in that squad are Mason Crane and Amar Verdi. Taha, you interviewed both of them for Wisden.com. It's our read of the week. You should go and dig it out. But it's about their struggles in paths back to cricket. And yeah, it's just tell us through like sort of the differing characters I guess they both have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was interested to talk to both of them because they had, with Crane, obviously he had the injury in 2018, but again, 2019 was quiet in a way, and Verdi had a very quiet 2019, didn't play a championship match till July. With Verdi, he was just basically told to get fitter by Surrey. And, you know, it was quite a stark fall because last season, you know, 19, 20 years of age, and he's, you know, bowling teams out of the Oval, and, you know, the best English spinner in the championship, helps them win the county championship. It's, you know, a lovely story. And yet he's sort of struggling to get a game in 2019. With Crane, it was different in that, you know, he had the stress fracture and he's trying to come back. And he was just so, it was great to sort of hear how honest he was. Basically being used only to, you know, help with Hampshire's over rate. Bowled 17 overs on the trot at Headingley. And his job was just for over it, and he was honest about that, and he said that, you know, sometimes that needs to be done, but he was still struggling with his back, and he had to bowl because Liam Dawson's at the World Cup, and his things get even more complicated for him next year when Nathan Lyon turns up as the overseas pro at Hampshire. So you just can't see him playing much Red Bull cricket, and while he's doing stuff with the white ball, and he's got 100 gig, and he's just been playing in the T10 league, he's desperate to play Test cricket, and he knows that England want a leg spinner in Test cricket. They, you know, they bought one to South Africa, and Matt Parkinson, who's jumped in front of him in the queue. But yeah, two really honest guys, and you know, they're two young English spinners, and how can you not back them? Because it's one of the toughest jobs out there.
Just on that, do we think Adil's done on the Test front? I mean, he's about. I understand he's about to sign a new contract with Yorkshire. Full, you know, all okay.
Well, their overseas signing indicates that. It probably is because they've signed Ashwin.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of get the feeling that England perhaps have moved on.
I think really. The shoulder's also
yeah,
another
the
thing.
Shoulder's an issue. Right. I think yeah. So is that the question? So yeah, there's a leg spinning vacancy.
Yeah.
So I mean, it feels like with Crane, it kind of could go one of two, or well, it could go a lot of ways, but two ways it could go. He could by this time, or not this time, but by the end of next summer, he could easily be England's sort of by next summer. Sorry, I mean the 2021 summer. He could be England's kind of all formats pick. That's one way it could go, or he could be out of the game, as happens to a lot of leg spinners, right? I mean, it's just a bizarre life.
Not just leg spinners, English spinners in general.
They just come and disappear, don't they?
Exactly.
It's really weird.
And in that way, that's why I'd mentioned Don Bess at the start, because it could have easily gone wrong. Yeah. It really could have. And
I think that's what makes it so impressive, isn't it? It's
exactly.
That he didn't, you know, he did what he needed to do.
Exactly. You've got to admire it, and he stuck at it. And yet, even now when he's doing well, the future is still slightly
everyone's
perilous.
Going, oh.
Well, you know, oh, what's going to happen when he goes back to Somerset? Is he going to, you know, does he have to leave his county? So that's the life of the English spinner. You're always sort of on the edge. You know, you could be right up there, and then, you know, in a matter of weeks or months, you're out of the professional game.
Any other players in those Lions squad catch the eye?
Well, it's nice that Tom Coler-Cadmore is in. You know, he's been quite honest about you know, his punishment for the sort of social media thing. He's a very talented lad, and I'm glad that England haven't, you know, used that as we're never going to pick you again type thing. So that's good news. I think the other one, Sam Northeast, who is in the Red Bull squad, you know, and he's not even 30, is he? But, you know, in terms of he's not a young player, but he had a good season, you know, batting for Hampshire last summer. And he's perhaps one not to forget about. Yeah. You know, I think we've seen with Joe Denley, haven't we, that years don't really matter. You know, if you churn out the runs, then they're going to look at you. He's growing as a player. And I think the move to Hampshire actually probably did him good, because he's had to battle quite hard and he's had to face some decent players in the nets, hasn't he? You know, Carl Abbott and what have you. So, that's quite an interesting one. And then a nice little seam attack with Saqib Mahmood. Saqib Mahmood's an interesting one, isn't it?
Mm.
Where do they go with Saqib Mahmood? Is he a white ball player? Is he a red ball player? Is he both?
But, I mean, we were there at the sort of Lions media day, and just listening to him talk, he's quite an astute thinker. I mean, he's a really young lad, but just the way he was talking about reverse swing and just, he's sort of, you know.
Yeah, he is, absolutely. He's an interesting one because he's not Jofra or Mark Wood-Pace, is he? He's, you know, and we shouldn't be lured into him being an express.
He's mid to height. He's
So it's quite interesting to see kind of what role they see him playing in the future. And perhaps not to overburden him. Maybe they do see him as a white ball player for the moment, at least, because there's quite a lot of seamers for the test team, isn't there? And there's no need to burden him too much, particularly if they're keeping an eye on him for the World T20.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's that close to sort of nailing down a test spot, like first choice full time, but I think they are going to want still to have that big group, basically, because there's no way Mark Wood and Jofra Archer are going to play all, maybe even the majority of England's tests going forward with their injury records and stuff. So you are going to want those players in reserve and those players for different conditions, especially if Mahmood's sort of a canny bowler and he's learning at Lancashire from like the best there's ever been, basically, in Jimmy, then that could be the way they see him as that. Or not the heir to James Anderson.
No. I mean, it's interesting that Richard Gleeson's in the squad, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I'm never quite sure with Lions squads totally what they're thinking is. You know, whether that's what you look at and go, they're the next cabs off the rank, or whether they're looking at taking a squad on a Lions tour that's going to win matches and not necessarily that it being about the next level up. Do you know what I mean? Is Richard Gleeson really going to get a test call up? I don't know, but he's no doubt very handy to have in that squad for them to win matches in Australia.
Yeah, okay. So England 19's kicked off their World Cup campaign with defeat to West Indies. Yaz Rana, who's out in South Africa, has all the important info about the opening rounds of the tournament.
England kicked off their under-19 World Cup campaign with a 71-run defeat at the hands of an impressive West Indies side in Kimberley. In truth, England were handsomely beaten in all three departments. Their new ball bowlers were wayward, there were mistakes in the field, and their batsmen struggled to rotate the strike against the West Indies spinners in a run chase that never really got going. The 20 overs of spin bowled by Lewis Goldsworthy and Hami Kadri were encouraging, though. They hardly bowled a bad ball between them, and at one point looked likely to restrict West Indies to under 200. West Indies had already beaten Australia early in the week, meaning that the England-Australia clash on Thursday is already effectively a knockout game. West Indies are a very good side. In Naeem Young, they have someone who possesses a skill set that few, if any, other players possess in the tournament. He's been West Indies player of the match in both their games so far, scoring quick and valuable runs at number 7, as well as taking a fifer against England with an impressive array of variations. Expect him to make his mark in the CPL very soon. And another one who you should expect to see in the CPL very soon is Jaden Seals. The West Indian opening bowler, who has a touch of the Jason Holders about him in terms of his approach to the crease, is another one to watch out for. He took a fourfer against Australia and bowled brilliantly against England too, going for none for 21 off his 10. He bowls around 85 miles per hour and he can swing the ball with the old ball. So he's definitely one to watch out for. Probably the seamer of the tournament so far. It's quite hard to gauge where a lot of the teams are at the moment, given the one-sided nature of a lot of the games. Afghanistan thrashed South Africa in this tournament opener. The wrist spin twins of Shafiqullah and Noor Ahmad ran through a slightly clueless looking South African middle order who didn't seem to be able to pick up any of their variations. With a decent top three that includes Ibrahim Zadran, who has a test match 87 to his name already, they could go far in the tournament. India beat Japan yesterday by 10 wickets, chasing down 41 in 4.5 overs. Mismatch doesn't really do the term justice, but the best piece of action was actually after the game, where a Japanese and Indian player celebrated their respective birthdays at the same time, surrounded by both their squads. There's a great video on Twitter of cake being rubbed in the faces of both players who are celebrating their birthday. Definitely one to watch if you can. Aside from the Japan game, India were dominant against Sri Lanka. They look to have batting depth that no other team can rival at the moment. Bangladesh and Pakistan also look very strong, but again, it's very hard to discern exactly where they're at now. My early prediction for the final would probably be India versus Bangladesh or West Indies. So we'll see how that shout goes.
It feels like this is a lower profile England 19 squad than previously. Is that fair to say?
Well, kind of. I mean, I think if you look back at 2008, did we think that... I mean, did we know that Jos Buttler and Ben Stokes and Joe Root were going to go on to be the players they are now? Or did we... I mean, I don't know. And when England... The only time England have won the under-19s World Cup, did we know that Rob Key and Graham Swan and Owen Shaw would go on to be, you know... Mm-hmm. Good, excellent cricketers.
Yeah.
I wonder if we kind of look back at them and go, oh, look, that they had that those names in them only now because we know that they went on to do things. So it could be that in, I don't know, 5 years' time, we look back and going, oh, Ben Charlesworth, you know, Jack Haynes, blah, blah, blah. Wow. But they're not loads. There's not names in there that I think most people would recognise.
Yeah, and it's not always the case, is it? I mean, you looked at we're looking at the 2010 squad. Did Nathan Buck, was it, that posted it on his Instagram? And we were trying to go through and it was like, recognised barely any of them, basically, didn't we?
Yeah, but although nine out of the 15 are still playing professional cricket. So, I mean, that's not bad, is it? Nine years later, that nine of them are still playing. So they clearly got something a bit right, that they were decent cricketers. It is so hard to tell, isn't it, at the age of 18, whether they're going to go on. And, you know, it is really harsh. With, you know, a couple of exceptions, you know, people like Sam Curran, you know, you know fairly early on, but it's hard to tell at 18. You know, they haven't finished growing, have they, for a start? So what might be a very successful seam bowler in the under-19s World Cup then isn't 3 years later.
Because they might have just developed.
That's it. They're done.
That's the final product. Yeah. Well, with some of them, you know, they're still... You know, they might not even be in an under-19 setup right now, but they just develop at a later
Absolutely.
Stage.
Yeah. So, but they, you know, they were comprehensively beaten by a very exciting West Indies side. The West Indies side looked really exciting.
Yeah, I just realised I forgot to ask you earlier for your moment of the week.
It was my moment of the week, actually, that West Indies win. The Deanne Young, is that his name?
Naeem Young.
Naeem Young, that's it. 61, 5 for 4 catches or whatever it was. Yeah. Looks an excellent cricketer. Was that his dad that there was a video of? Jumping up and down on the sidelines going, that's my son, that's my son. That's I think that was his dad.
If that's what he was saying, then you'd hope it's...
There was an ICC video. That's my son. but the other exciting player is Seals, the fast bowler, because he looks rapid and very accurate and really exciting. Bowling, you know, sort of 86 upwards most balls and not spraying it. And it would go for only 21 in 10 overs or something.
Yeah.
I think it's really, it's very good for cricket, to trot out that cliche, to have an exciting West Indies side, isn't it? It just, you know, I find it quite warming when a side with a board with very little money manages to continue to produce exciting cricketers.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that gives a real lift to the region as well, is the under-19s team doing well, more than it does in other places, I think. I mean, that 2016 they had when they won the 2T20 World Cups was kick-started by that, and it felt like almost like the start of something, like the signifying that they were still a force to be reckoned with, which was then shown a couple months later. So yeah, it is really exciting, and hopefully they go far.
So they've beaten Australia and England, and that's a, you know, a very good start to a tournament, that, isn't it?
In other news, Ireland drew a T20I series against West Indies, as we just said, the world champions, which is quite an achievement. That opening pair of Kevin O'Brien and Paul Sterling really is something, especially Kevin O'Brien's stats are actually incredible after he was promoted to Open. So before he was promoted to Open, he averaged 15.5 and a strike rate 118 in international cricket, in T20 cricket. And since he's been promoted to Open, he averaged 31.42, a strike rate 155. He's got a century, a few 50s. It's amazing.
You know, with all due respect to the rest of the Ireland batting lineup, when sort of one wicket falls in that Ireland innings, you're kind of like, well, that's kind of, the show's over now, because those two together are something else.
Are we going to see Kevin O'Brien and Paul Sterling in the Blast this year, do you think?
Oh, who knows? I know that, well, I don't know. I think de Villiers isn't coming back to Middlesex.
Okay.
Which frees up an overseas slot, doesn't it? Obviously, you know, they know him and know what he can do. It's a real dilemma, isn't it, for a county? Do you use up one of your overseas slot on an Irishman? Do you?
Because part of it is a marketing thing, right? With de Villiers, it was like, yes, obviously it's AB de Villiers, the batsman, but it's AB de Villiers, the star as well.
Exactly.
And with all due respect to Paul Sterling, he might do the job on the pitch, but you're looking at off-field stuff.
He's
too.
He's not on your poster, is he?
Exactly.
I suspect a decision won't be taken on either of them until nearer the competition, when it becomes clearer who is and who isn't available overseas-wise for the... Or it might be that they, you know, the Blast is in two little blocks, isn't it? So it might be that there's a star available for the first bit, and then you bring in someone else for the second bit, or vice versa. It feels a real shame to me that they've had to make a decision. I suppose them's the rules, aren't they? But it does feel a shame that you have to make a decision between being an Ireland player and being a county player.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting one because it felt like a lot of people were saying it'll be interesting to see what happens when someone challenges it, and then no one did. Like, I spoke to Richard Holdsworth at Cricket Ireland, who was saying that, oh, it's not our battle to fight, but we wonder if there's something sort of shady going on legally. And again, I think Tim Murta said something similar, and Paul Sterling is something similar, but no one was willing to actually put the head above
didn't
the parapet.
Didn't want to do the fight.
Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting on Paul Sterling, because I mean, if you think about Middlesex last year, Majib, probably a more valuable T20 player than Paul Sterling, but then they had Hafiz for the last section. You'd probably rather have Paul Sterling than Hafiz, wouldn't you? I mean, he's a really good T20 player in his own right. It's not just about him being good for the Blast. I think he's a player that
absolutely
stands out from that Ireland team. So other interesting cricket this week, India came from behind to beat Australia 2-1 in an ODI series. Most of the usual suspects did pretty well. Kara Hall continues to impress wherever he's asked to bat and seems to displace Rishabh Pant as first choice keeper. And Manus Labuschagne and Steve Smith continue to be good at batting. And finally, Zimbabwe are playing a test match against Sri Lanka at home. It's one for the purists and maybe a decent argument for four-day tests, that particular five-day test.
Or 3 days, yeah. it's tough going that one, yeah.
Yeah, Zimbabwe's first innings opening stand on day one amounted to 96 runs in 50.1 overs. That was hard going, but still great to see Test cricket being played that there. And if you want to see people scoring not very many runs, it is being live streamed for free on YouTube. So make sure
you sold it really well there.
And the last thing is, how does the offer of cheap but good beer sound to you? As our regular listeners will be by now well aware, we've teamed up with Beer 52 to offer you the chance to get your hands on 10 exclusive high quality craft beers for just £5, and there's a couple of other freebies thrown in there too. So head to beer52.com/wisdom to check that one out. That's it from us. Thanks very much for coming on, Lizzie.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Taha.
Cheers, Ben.
And thanks very much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends about it and subscribe. And if you really enjoyed it, you might have wanted to leave us a nice, maybe even a 5-star review on your choice. Thanks.